Okay, so I hear you like books.
Why, yes, I do.
That's right. When I was your age, television was called books. And this is a special book.
Because when you read a book as a child, it becomes part of your identity in a way that no other reading in your whole life does, and I have gotten carried away.
Yeah. Yeah, you have.
Are you seeing the books? Everything you would want to read is right here. Feel it. Feels good, right? Just smell it. Nothing smells like that.
Welcome, friends, to episode 10 of Teen Friendship Reads the Newberries. Today, we'll be discussing Mrs. Frisbee and the Rats of Nim. I'm joined today by my fellow podcasters, Mandalay.
What up, friends?
And Lauren.
Hello, friends.
And me, I'm Leah. I don't often introduce myself.
So glad you can join us, introduce us.
We might sound more in sync with each other because we're actually sitting in the same room. Just pull back the curtain a little. You guys look surprised about that.
What? We are?
So yes, we're here and we're ready. And I'm going to throw it metaphorically to Lauren.
I will metaphorically catch it.
Guys, this is our 10th episode.
Big deal.
Of Team Friendship Reads the Newberries.
We should have had cake tonight.
We're having watermelon.
So that's like nature's cake right there.
I like that. Watermelon. Nature's cake. We should, whoever sells watermelon, that should be their slogan.
It should be.
You know?
That can be our first t-shirt as Team Friendship. Team Friendship Podcast.
Watermelon.
Nature's cake.
I like it.
We come up with so many good ideas when we're on the air.
You know, I just love it.
Be looking out for some Team Friendship merch.
Yeah, Mandy's in charge of
our
that.
CEO.
Headed up by the CEO.
Yeah, the CEO of Team Friendship.
Anyway.
So, for the love of books, guys, I guess I'll go first.
Yes, do it.
Handed me the ball. Of metaphors.
There's no ball.
There's not.
The ball.
Just watermelon. So, let's see. I just finished reading the book Ready Player One.
Yes.
That is a, like, sci-fi futuristic book. Have you guys heard of that?
No.
I'm surprised that you have not heard of this book, Mandy.
Don't tell me it's right up my alley. I've got too much
I'm not going to say that. I'm just surprised you haven't heard. They are making a movie. The trailer for the movie just came out probably about a month ago at Comic-Con. Mm-hmm. It's directed by Steven Spielberg.
Mm.
So basically the premise of the book is it's like 2040 something and this, you know, billionaire has died. He has created this virtual reality world.
Is this book in graphic novel?
I did the audiobook.
Oh, okay.
It's narrated by Will Wheaton.
What is it called?
Ready Player One.
Will Wheaton.
Yeah, I didn't know who he was.
You know what? I do know what you're talking about.
Yeah, Big Bang Theory. He was on, he became famous in Star Trek.
Yeah. I've seen the trailer for the movie you're talking about. I had no idea it was a book.
Yeah, the book is going to be better than the movie. Because the movie is like this billionaire was obsessed with 80s pop culture. Mm-hmm. So that's like all throughout the book. And I got a lot of it. Some of it I didn't. There were a lot of video games I'd never heard of. I'm a little bit too young. I just missed that mark.
You can't give yourself that over
there. But I was born in the 80s. I didn't grow up in the 80s. So it's different. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff that I did know.
The trailer looked like it did have a lot of 80s.
There
stuff
is.
In it,
there's
though.
Just like, there was a lot of Star Wars stuff in the book, Lord of the Rings, yes. All kinds of stuff. But Warner Brothers is making the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they don't have rights to whatever it is, they can't use it in the movie. And then Steven Spielberg, bless his heart, and I just heard this, I don't know if this is accurate. I heard that he is being humble and not using any of his. Anything that he did.
Oh, nice.
In the movie. And I'm like, this movie's going to be dumb. Like, yeah. If they're not using all this stuff in it. I don't know.
So we'll see. Maybe they'll make some different decisions. But the trailer looks really good.
Yeah, it looks cool. This is an adult book. There's some profanity in it, and there's probably
some profanity in some of the children's books. Well, yeah, well, this is
not a lot. There's a lot at the beginning of the book, and I was thinking to myself, I don't know if I can handle this, but it gets better, less of it throughout the book. And then there's just a few things that, you know, only adults should know about, really. But as far as, like, violence and, you know, all the other stuff, I found it very intriguing, very interesting. It definitely has the dystopian vibe to it that, you know, that I love.
Those books always go big. Dystopian.
Yeah. So, I just finished that. I'm also currently working on The Silmarillion, which is basically, it's like the creation story / like history of the world of Middle Earth. It's by Tolkien.
Of course you're reading that.
Yeah, well, I've tried to read it several times and I put it down. And I tried again and I put it down. Well,
are you committed now?
I am. A few weeks ago, I asked my husband, I said, when are you going to read Harry Potter? Because he still hasn't read. Now, my husband loves Lord of the Rings. He's read everything he can about Lord of the Rings. So he's not like crazy nerdy about it, but if I ask him a question, usually he knows the answer or where to find it. So I said, when are you reading Harry Potter? And he said, probably never. I was like, what? He's like, I'll read it when you read The Silmarillion. So I said, all right, challenge accepted.
That's all you have. I will do anything for you to read Harry Potter.
So I'm actually really enjoying it. It's actually been very interesting. I've gotten to some parts where I'm like, oh, I recognize that person. It like gives like their lineage and all that. So it's pretty
cool. Is he enjoying Harry Potter?
He listened to the first one on audiobook, and he is just like, he wants like
the action and fighting the bad guys and all
he's
that.
He's got some stuff to do. And I told him that. I said, you have to remember that Harry Potter, the books were written for children, mm-hmm. and the series is written for children as they grow up. So each book is going to be a year older. Yes. So you're not going to get to that scary, intense stuff and probably until book 4. So I told him to press on. So now I like the first book and the last book are kind of tied for my favorite. Because I don't know, I just like that innocence of Harry and when he's young and the world building of the first book.
It's like the beginning of series when everything is just young and mm-hmm. sweet. Like that's how I feel about Gilmore Girls.
Nothing bad has happened
the
yet.
The beginning episodes are just trying to survive high school, you know? And it's nice and young and sweet.
Yeah.
I'm ready to reread Harry Potter, I think. Mm-hmm. I think it's fall.
Yeah, I want to as well.
Do it. Is that all for the love of books?
Yeah, that's what I'm working on. So yeah, that's my for the love of books.
Mandy, do you have?
I do. I am currently on Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. Mm. I am almost done. I think I have less than 100 pages left.
I'm actually very proud of you.
So I would have finished it, but I had to read a different book for a certain podcast. So
sorry again for getting
proud of her that she managed to stop reading.
Right,
Harry Potter.
Yes,
because I was really getting
it's
into
hard.
It. Guys.
It's hard to put down.
Those books are page turners. And I also bought another book. I don't really know what it's about yet. It's called The Copper Promise. Like a steampunk fantasy. Cool. I don't really have anything to say about it yet because I'm in like the beginning where they're setting up the story.
The Copper Promise.
I just saw it and I was like, you know what?
You saw the cover and it just spoke to you.
Well, and I read it and I'm really into like steampunk stuff. So I was like, I'll check this out. Nice. I'll let you guys know if ever finish it.
Tell us how the first few pages go. Leah, what have you been into?
My reading life has slowed as of late because I got a job. So
What a drag, you know?
Welcome to my world.
Having to work, putting the cramp on my reading life.
I read on break. You should do that.
Yeah, I get one, like, 30-minute break, and usually I'm not scarfing my lunch down in that time.
One of those book stands, and then you can scarf and read.
Anyway, so what I have been reading, I read a book on audiobook, but I feel like I talked about it last time.
And I might have talked about this one last time, but no one seems to remember, so maybe the listeners won't remember.
I am reading, it's called Four Seasons in Rome, and it's by Anthony, I don't know how to say his last name, Doerr?
I would say Doerr.
Doerr, D-O-E-R-R. He wrote the book, All the Light We Cannot See.
Mm-hmm.
And
I remember you telling me about that.
Yes. I read that book. It took me a long time, but it was good, and I finished it. This book is kind of his memoir of part of the time when he was writing All the Light We Cannot See. It's about his personal life. He got a writer's fellowship in Rome right after his wife had twin baby boys.
Wow.
So they moved there with their babies were not, I mean, maybe 6 months old.
That's crazy.
It was their first kids. So
this is like an autobiographical
book. Yeah, I don't know if it falls in the travel memoir section.
Okay.
But he just writes about life. And I can resonate with a lot of it just because Joey and I lived in Ukraine mm-hmm. for 2 years. And a lot of that cross-cultural stuff really is bringing me back.
Yeah.
Now I want to go visit Rome.
Do it.
Because.
Take me with you.
Yes. Let's all go. So friendship. Much history. And just he keeps talking about. Because he's working with a bunch of other intellectuals. And so he's learning a lot about Rome as well.
Nice.
I'm enjoying it. So that's what I'm working on.
Well, Mandy, we're ready for the book news.
Nice. I'm so excited.
That's it. She doesn't actually have any more news.
Just wanted to play that jingle.
I had to scour the internet for something that I could use.
I'm so proud of you.
All right. So I have a few things. This is apparently old news, but the Phantom Toll Booth to be a feature film. Someone has read that. Read it in the fourth grade.
Does it say when it will be released?
It doesn't say. I
see. Sometimes they announce like, "Hey, we're making this movie," and like it takes them a long time to make movies. So
it's true. Or they lose their funding.
Yeah, or they give up.
Anywho, I read that in elementary school and I liked it.
So. Cool.
Harry Potter History of Magic books to be published in conjunction with exhibition. Too bad we don't live in the UK, guys.
I know. I'm moving there.
We miss out on all the cool Harry Potter stuff.
They announced today there's a sweepstakes. It's like one of those.
A contest?
Yeah. It's like for like if you donate to J.K. Rowling's charity, Lumos. Then you get entered in to win, like, a trip for two over to the set of Fantastic Beasts. Nice. And then you get to go on that set tour of the Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We need a trip for
three. That's what I said, so I'm not entering.
Sorry, JK.
I didn't look at the rules. Sometimes there's, like, a minimum of how much you have to donate for stuff like that. So. Usually there is. But it's a very good cost, so.
I'm excited about this History of Magic book, though.
I know. I haven't bought all those kind of, like, what are they called? Like, in-universe books, you know, because it's, like, his textbooks, you know?
I haven't purchased them yet either. Shocker, because usually I'm all about slinging the cash for books. But I will. Mm-hmm. I will be doing it. Speaking of, an illustrated edition of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Maybe I should just wait, because maybe they're just going to end up illustrating all of the extra books. Yeah. And
just buy those.
I really like illustrations.
Well, especially with textbooks, especially with Fantastic Beasts, I mean, it makes sense to have pictures of the animals.
Our good friend, Kate DiCamillo.
Kate!
October 3rd, 2017, La La La, A Story of Hope.
And that's a picture book, if I'm understanding that right.
So. Yes.
She's done other picture books, hasn't she?
She has a whole series of Mercy Watson books about a pig.
Okay. Our good friend. We've never actually met her. No not but to I feel confuse like we anyone. Know
her. Right? Team Friendship knows Kate
DiCamillo. My husband went to Minneapolis recently, which is where Kate lives. I don't stalk her. She puts that on things.
Right, yeah.
And I told him when he went up there, if you see Kate, tell her I love her. He didn't see her, though. Maybe next
that's
time.
Sad. Kate, I need you to write a series like Harry Potter.
I think she'd be good at that.
Yes. That's what I want from you. Do it. And then the barn that inspired Charlotte's Web is for sale in Maine.
Let's purchase it. We're moving to Maine for a cool
$3.7 million
livestock.
It could be ours.
I can't. We're gonna need all of our listeners to donate.
We're starting
friendship.
A GoFundMe now.
Husbands and family members, yes. Please contribute.
There will be a link on our website
in advance.
Wow. That would actually be really cool, though.
I think the idea of it is cool. I don't know if in reality it would be cool.
It looks like a nice place.
I love your families. I don't know about living with you guys.
No, I mean just
livestock.
Owning this place would be cool.
I would. I've always wanted to live
pretty
on a farm. I kind of do.
You literally live.
I live in a barn, but we don't have animals.
You wouldn't even know I was there.
It's just like machinery and landscaping and such.
By the barn in Maine.
And soybeans this year.
Sure,
there's mice. Soybeans is different. There's definitely mice and there's definitely raccoons.
So, not no animals.
Yeah, you're right. Sorry. You know, I'm living the dream already. I didn't even know it.
Anything else, Mandy?
Philip and Aaron Stead complete newly discovered Mark Twain fairy tale. In his diary, Mark Twain described a typical evening in which his daughters requested he tell them a story, and the author concocted a fairy tale about Johnny, a poor boy who is given magical seeds and an important mission. So I'm assuming, I don't know, we'll have a link on our website.
Of course, always.
Y'all can check that out. And that concludes our book news.
Thank you, Mandy. We appreciate it.
We appreciate you.
You don't have an exit.
I don't have an outro.
Someday, when we're feeling comfortable with ourselves, we might share these silly, like, weather videos that Mandy and I did back in the day.
I will never be that comfortable.
You're not even behind, I mean, you're not even in front of the camera for most of it. It's me that has to let the world know what a crazy person I am.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get into this book, guys. All right? The 1972 Newbery Medal winner, Mrs. Frisbee and the Rats of Nim by Robert C. O'Brien. I'm just going to read the flap here. It says, Mrs. Frisbee was a mouse whose husband, Jonathan, was dead. And so, when she had a serious problem, she had no one to turn to for help. That is, she had no one until a friendly crow took her to a wise old owl, a frightening creature for a mouse to visit. Then at the owl's suggestion, she went to visit the rats who lived under the rosebush. This, too, was a daring undertaking. The rats were an odd and unknown lot. Everyone on Mr. Fitzgibbon's farm knew the rats did strange things. Yet nothing Mrs. Frisbee had heard of the rats was as strange as the truths she discovered about them, and also about her dead husband. Neither these rats nor her husband were ordinary creatures. All had been imprisoned for several years in a laboratory known as Nim, where various injections had made them wise, long-lived, and inventive. The rats were indeed able to help Mrs. Frisbee, and she in turn rendered them a great service. As to the end of the story, Mrs. Frisbee had her problem solved. But the rats, well, that's something else again.
Yeah, it is.
I just want to say, my flap is different. But they give too much information on these flaps.
They definitely, in my opinion,
I was gonna say, the back of my book doesn't have near as much as one.
I'm really grateful that I did not read the flap.
I did not read the flap either.
Because I would have.
That was a lot of words. That was a long blurb.
This one is a little bit more concise. I think this is a newer edition.
Yeah.
But it's still a lot of information.
I think mine is like an original edition.
Yeah.
It's from the library.
Yeah, and we all have different covers, guys.
This is cute and sweet. Mine looks like Mrs. Frisbee might be rabbit.
Who was your illustrator?
Edward S. Gazi.
See, mine is Zena Bernstein.
Do you have an illustrator, Mandy? Zena Bernstein.
Aww.
So Zena must have just redone it on yours because it looks way better on yours. Of course, mine are in like black.
Well, the pictures. I was going to say the pictures in the actual book are really.
Okay.
I'm sorry that you are not able to see what we're speaking of. We'll take pictures of our books.
We will not. For sure. We're saying we will, but we will forget.
We'll do it.
I'll do it. Do it right now.
Okay, Leah, give us some book or author history and book background.
I'm hoping you have a lot of explanation for me.
Well, I don't have that much of explanation. I don't have the answers that you want.
Well, I have other questions.
Okay, well, we'll work on it. So, first spoiler, or I guess news, that I shared already with the group here, is that Robert C. O'Brien's actual name is Robert Leslie Conley. He grew up as a middle child in a semi-large Irish family. Mm-hmm. His wife wrote a couple different articles about him and described him, or he was described as a little boy, as precocious and a lover of words. And he often retreated into very vivid worlds of imagination. And this was intriguing to me, and I felt like it explained a lot about why I like this book. It said that he could go so deeply into these imaginative worlds inside of his head as a child that he remembers the day, the time, where he was as a high schooler when he decided that he was no longer going to go into these fantasy worlds because he needed to live in reality. Like, that is how far wow. these little adventures went for him. So he obviously has a very vivid imagination. And when I read that, it kind of clicked with me because I liked this book a lot. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was right there with the rats. And mm-hmm. I think it's because he was right there with the rats, too. And he could very vividly and clearly see what was happening, mm-hmm. which made a lot of sense to me. So his family didn't really like him when he was little. They found him annoying. He was very intelligent, but also kind of whiny and sickly. And his wife, or his not wife, his mom, tended to baby him. Mm-hmm. And so it was. They said she was overprotective of him.
Are we still talking about Robert?
Yes. Possibly Mandalay as a child. He was born in Brooklyn, but he grew up on Long Island. Initially, he went to Williams College, but he dropped out during his sophomore year. And in a couple places I read, it said he had, and this is in quotation marks, a breakdown period. So he dropped out of college in the middle of his sophomore year and just kind of quit. So here's what I don't understand. I don't think this was a legit breakdown because he ended up going home, which was disgraceful that he dropped out of college. But then he studied piano at Juilliard. He went into the city and took lessons at Juilliard. So he obviously wasn't.
Well, I mean, it's still kind of a breakdown. Like, he went and did something totally. His family must have had
some very high standards for that.
Maybe they had a different dream for him.
Yeah. So he did that for just a little while, and then he ended up going back to university, and he studied English at Rochester. So then he worked as a journalist for Newsweek magazine. And that's where he met his wife. And they had a son, Christopher, three daughters, Jane, Sarah, and Catherine.
Aww.
Mandy found some info about Jane. For now or for later.
I can give it now. His daughter Jane wrote the sequel to Mrs. Frisbee and the Rats of Nim.
Under her actual name.
Yes, under her actual name. I was very confused. Sarah, I thought,
or
like,
Jane Conley.
When I saw it, I just thought some like random person decided to write a sequel. Not allowed.
So,
random people.
So the reason he used his pen name was that he also he worked for National Geographic magazine. He started working there in 1951. He wrote under the pen name because it was frowned upon that their writers did outside work.
So it was to save his job.
So interesting.
Yes.
So it wasn't generally known that he was, like, the senior assistant editor for National Geographic magazine, but people didn't really know that he was the same person that was writing these.
Right. That's cool.
So he lived in the city for a little while, then he moved to the country with his family for a while, and that's when he really developed a love of nature. But it wasn't until he moved back to the city, where he didn't have to commute a long way every day, that he had extra time and decided to start working on these children's books. So it was only in the last, like, 10 years of his life that he wrote fiction works, like this book, and he wrote two other books. And he actually had some eye issues and other stuff, so that's why he ended up moving back to the city to be close to work. But it said that he gave up pretty much his entire social life, any downtime, which may have explained the heart attack. But he had this steady output of these fiction books, even though he was working a full-time job, because he gave up his social life. He wrote a few paragraphs every day, Sundays and holidays included.
Wow. It's dedication.
Yes. Okay, so the inspiration for these books. So NIM.
Yes.
Stands for
NIM.
The National Institute of Mental Health.
Which he never says in the book.
Did he just make that up? That's not like a thing, is it?
It is a legit place. It is a government facility that experiments. So back in the era that he wrote these books, there were some pretty intense. Now, these are not experiments like, let's see if this makeup is going to kill people kind of things.
Right.
One of the most famous experiments from this place. They put four pairs of mice into a mouse universe they called Universe 25. It was a 9 by 9 foot metal pen with tunnels, nesting boxes, food and water dispensers. The population doubled every couple of months until it reached 620 mice on day 315. By day 560, there were 2,220 mice crammed into a 9 by 9 space, and things got pretty ugly. This might be sensitive for children if they're in the room. I don't know. Mother mice kicked their babies out of the nest before the young were ready. Other mice wounded and killed the babies. Males lost the ability to protect their females. Fighting, cannibalism broke out amongst the non-dominant males. Dominant males retreated into themselves, preferring to spend their time eating, drinking, and grooming. Eventually, the mice stopped reproducing entirely, and the mouse society came to an end. So the guy that was doing these experiments basically was looking at this and saying, this is what's going to happen to people.
Oh, eventually. Overpopulating the earth or something.
Eventually, we're all going to die because, So there was another one with rats where they put them in a barn that was all sealed off. And it was basically the same ending. All of the males became very, anyway, it was just bad.
I feel like that's a really bad comparison, though.
Yeah. So, obviously, a lot of people had some issues with treating animals like that. So, that was the inspiration for these children's books.
Well, how did he know about all of this?
I'm sure it's from his studies at National Geographic and whatnot. And I think it was pretty well known around that time. Hmm. So, in the movie, The Secret of NIM, does a cinder block sink into mud or something?
Yes.
And they're all trapped?
Yes.
So, there is another description that was a little bit more graphic that I did not read. And so after, it was similar to the mice one, but this one was for rats. At the end of that, the guy says, suddenly, finding your cinder block house sinking into mud with your family still trapped inside doesn't seem like the worst part of your week.
Nice. I wish he had more books than the handful that he has.
I'm sure he would have. He died young.
Spent a whole day living in the world, guys.
Right. Let's live in the world again.
Let's do it.
So our format for this episode is we will be discussing the themes in the book. And along the way, we'll just discuss the characters that kind of go with those themes. Sound good?
Sounds great.
All right. So first theme is parenting, and more specifically, motherhood. So we meet Mrs. Frisbee, whose husband, Jonathan, has passed away. And in the book, in the beginning, she doesn't know how he has died. She just knows that he's dead.
Which, if you read the flap of the book, it tells you.
Yeah, don't read the flap, guys.
And mine.
Never do it.
It's rude.
It is rude.
And we meet her children, Martin, Teresa, Timothy, and Cynthia.
Four little mice babies.
Hmm.
And Timothy is sick.
It's always the little Timmies.
Oh, tiny Tim. Timothy the mouse.
My theory on that is Timothy was supposed to represent him.
I like your theory.
As a child.
Yeah.
Do you think these authors know that they're doing that? Or do you think it's just clear to us to see?
I haven't written anything, nor have I been published, but the ideas I have definitely stem from... you can't help it. It's the same with any art. Yourself
like you
is gonna...
He was sick.
Yeah.
So, well, and the Timothy and the Timothy in this book also loved stories.
Yeah, it's true.
Didn't he? Yeah. He liked when his mom told him stories.
I think that's how he wanted his siblings to treat him. Because they took very good care of him.
Well, I thought it was interesting that his mom was like the hero of this book.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I love that.
Mrs. Frisbee.
I love, like, let me just read what I wrote down in my notes. I want to hear your thoughts as well. Okay.
Okay. That's what we're here for.
So don't let my thoughts take over your thoughts. So this is my thoughts. In this book, so Mrs. Frisbee, she might not be living a very interesting life at first. But in my opinion, there's something beautiful in the ordinary. She's faithfully caring for her children, and when one of them is ill, she goes out and does what she needs to do to help him. And this is what any mother would do. It's not epic or extraordinary. You know, it's quite the opposite.
It's quite epic for a mouse. There's a lot of danger going to get medicine. You know, we can just drive to Walgreens.
Like, as mothers and parents, you know, like, you feed your kids, you discipline them, instruct, clean, nurture, love, repeat. You know, it's just like this cycle of life. It's very monotonous. But I think we can look past the ordinary and miss the amazing, you know, miss how amazing parents are, you know, and caregivers, you know.
Take our own mothers, mm-hmm. for instance.
Yes. Think about your mothers right now.
We have amazing mothers.
Yes. And I don't know, but I just think about all the ordinary, you know, quote unquote, ordinary occupations we have in this world, not just parents. Like, mm-hmm. you take that away, life would be not good. There's beauty in the ordinary. There's need in the ordinary.
I kind of had a similar thought. It was interesting to me that the mom was the one on the adventure in this story. Because mm-hmm. you don't often see that in children's literature.
It's mm-hmm. only the kids.
Typically, yeah. the kid. Mm-hmm. But I just think that's really neat for kids to see. And maybe if a child is astute, they will pick up on the fact that it takes a lot for mom mm-hmm. to make sure that we are cared for and safe, and this is right. what she worries about, and this mm-hmm. is what she does for us, and
all the stuff she like kept from them,
so right?
They don't
right.
have to worry.
Of course, the kids are like, "What is my mother keeping?
Yeah,
is my father in a laboratory?
Some things you don't need to know, children."
But yeah, I also appreciated that it was a glorification of, you know, the mother's efforts for mm-hmm. her children. It's a different take on things.
For sure.
Like, even though I've seen the movie, I guess I was kind of waiting for, like, one of the kids to be involved in the adventure.
Right. No. So. The mom.
Not, I wasn't disappointed or anything. Good job, Mrs. Frisbee.
There's also kind of, like, the subcategory of, like, widowhood and single parenting there mm-hmm. as well. So, shout out to all those single parents.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Leah had one of those.
My mother.
She has one of those. She's still with us.
She definitely went on many adventures. Mm-hmm. And there is something to it, though. Like, the mom still had to depend on her kids more than what mm-hmm. a normal parent would. She had to make sure they took care of their brother. And
right, yeah.
I didn't have any siblings, but I did have probably more information from my mom than most kids mm-hmm. would have, because I was her friend. And also right. her child. Yeah. So.
But I enjoyed watching this amazing little mouse mama.
Yes.
Another theme I really, really love in this book is this sense of community.
Yes.
How she has to ask for help. You know, at some point, she's done all she can do and she realizes, okay, I have to go get help. And just, I don't know, that idea that we're not islands unto ourselves. But yeah, just how we're created for a relationship and we're not called to do life alone. It doesn't matter if you're an introvert or an extrovert, like, you need people, and, you know, I just, asking for help is not a sign of weakness.
Right.
Like, I don't
like talking.
No, I don't either. And it's, I think for me it's like part of that, like, I am an introvert, but it's also pride. Mm-hmm. Like, if I ask for help, people are going to think I'm weak. Or I wasn't smart enough or strong enough to do it on my own.
Especially from my mom, when she already told me it wasn't going to work.
So I I've personally learned throughout my life to swallow my pride and ask for help. I've tried on many occasions to do things on my own. And that has yielded terrible results.
Including increased stress and anxiety.
Indeed.
Levels.
And then when I finally did learn to ask for help, it was like, wow, this is so much easier. Like, why didn't I do this before? You know?
Well, and her desperation pushes her outside
yeah.
of that.
Yeah.
I can do it myself.
The kid is dying.
You kind of you save. Do what you have to mm-hmm. do at times.
For sure.
And
for sure.
I appreciated that about her because she mm-hmm. does seem like the kind of character that wouldn't typically.
Mm-hmm.
She could do it on her
own. Right.
She's
yeah.
got this.
Yeah.
But then her son made her go out of her comfort zone.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
And ask for help.
So this is where we meet Mr. Ages. He's the older mouse. She goes to, and she just knows, like, she's gone to him before for medicine and stuff like that, so she goes to him again, and it's quite the trek for her to go do this, but she does it. Do you have like thoughts on Mr. Ages?
I just see him as this cool dude that has, like, a bunch of crap to, like, make stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Is he in the movie?
Yeah.
I don't remember. I need to watch it again.
Yeah.
Like, the little medicine man.
Right, he's got his herbs, and he's like, oh, if we mix these two things together, this happens, and come here and taste this, you know? One of those.
Yes.
Scatterbrain, but yet knows what he's doing.
Yes. One of those.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought he was a fun character. Mm-hmm. I love how concerned he was for her family mm-hmm. and looking out for her. And
which we don't know at first why.
Right.
He's just a nice person. Which he is a nice mouse. But yeah, then we find out there's a history there.
They go way back.
Yeah. Then she meets Jeremy the Crow.
I love Jeremy.
Mm-hmm. I just picture him with, like, such a dumb voice. Like, you know, he's, like, the dopey, like, doo-doo character.
Yeah, he was actually voiced by Dom DeLuise in the movie.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. I just love how he's attracted to all the shiny.
Yeah, he's like, oh, it's so shiny.
Something shiny.
I just had to get it.
He added some levity, for sure.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there wasn't much of that.
Mm-hmm. And just how he is so, like, thankful to her. I mean, she mm-hmm. saves his life, so she's like, yeah, I'll do whatever you... I'll take you anywhere.
Yeah.
I will be your personal chauffeur from now on.
Yeah, I like that about him, too, because he helped her the one time. Mm-hmm. But then he's like, no, whenever you need me,
yeah.
I'll come back and help you.
Yeah.
He's just flying around looking for shinies, so he's got some time.
Well, the kids are like, I know, we'll just put something shiny on right, the arm, and he'll come back.
Like a bat signal. We need Jeremy Crow.
So funny.
This book totally sucks you in. Like, I am in that world, you know? Mm-hmm. I love that you can just picture every little knot in the tree as she's running, and I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I was in that world for 5.5 hours
every
today.
Time I see tinfoil, I'm gonna think of Jeremy. He's still alive, right?
Yes.
So the next theme kind of goes along with this sense of community, but it's going outside your comfort zone. So Mrs. Frisbee has to go to the owl.
Yes. I feel like I vaguely remember that from the movie, and I was, like, terrified at that.
That owl is freaky. And I, at first, before I read the book, you know, Manny and I watched the movie several times as children, I thought, oh, they just did that in the movie. They made him, like, scary in the movie. No.
He was scary.
Like, they talk about his eyes glowing. And
well, if you think about, I mean, he eats. I'll eat mice.
Yeah. That's scary.
So, that is scary.
She has to go in there and ask him for
but
help.
But I want to know if that's a real thing that, like, because he was like, he won't kill you in his house or whatever. Like, is that a real thing?
I think it was just him.
Okay.
They don't like to kill in their house.
They like to kill in their house.
I mean,
it's dirty.
That what you find in owl holes or, like, bones of mice?
Neither have I.
Yeah,
and I feel like in the movie, weren't there bones and stuff in his little
owl hole? But that's probably just from what he ate. I can't prove that he killed them there. You know, we'd have to get the forensics team in there.
Okay, yeah. We're going to go in depth with this. We got this.
They often swallow them whole.
Oh.
Well, they're tiny.
Like, mice are, I mean, most mice are tiny.
And owls are big. Their beaks aren't that big.
Ew.
It's great. Okay.
Maybe you shouldn't look this
up. Like sorry. It. Side note.
So anyway, she goes to the owl out of her comfort zone, and then she has to go again out of her comfort zone to the rats.
I never thought I would like a group of rats.
I love them. I want to live with them.
I mean, to be fair, on the cover of my book, the mouse looks way creepier than the rats, too.
I love the rats, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just love, and also perseverance is a theme, too. And they kind of go together, but just, she doesn't give up. Like, she could have, like, gone to the owl, and he's like, you need to go to the rats. And she could be like, you know what?
I'm done.
You know, like, telling me to go to the rats and the crap.
And then if I go to the rats, what are they going to do? Tell me to go to the lions? You know, like, I just...
But no, she keeps going. And I just love that quote where she's in, like, the tunnel and the rose bush. And Mr. Ages is in there. And she tells him the whole story. Because he's like, what are you doing here? And she's like, well, come here. And he's like, you went into the owl's tree? She says, yeah, but I was afraid, you know. And he's like, well, I should think so. That took courage. And her response is great. She's just like, yeah, I had to do it.
Like, she didn't have a choice.
She did not have a choice. You know, and I just, I don't know, That just really resonated with me as a mom, especially as a mom of, like, a child that was in the NICU for several months. Like, I got a lot of people tell me stuff like that. They're just trying to be encouraging, but that was usually my response was, well, I got to do it, you know. And also people would ask, like, how do you do it? How are you doing this? I'm like, well, I just have to.
Yeah.
I don't get a choice, you know.
There's no other option.
You know. So, do you guys have more thoughts on those themes?
I do not. I think you did a good job with that there, Lauren.
So, kind of like in the middle of the book, we kind of get like this backstory on the rats of Nim.
Yes, we do.
And Nicodemus is kind of like the leader. He gives her this whole backstory. And to be honest, as I'm reading this, I'm totally getting, like, Pinky in the Brain vibes. Like, and, like, that song is going through my head.
Yes.
Yeah. My dad used to love that little cartoon. I just remember watching it a lot when we got home from school. And it was mostly because he liked it. Do you remember that?
I liked it, too.
Yeah. It's a clever thing.
I still
thing.
Like it.
Yeah. I was totally getting those vibes.
The whole part with the history...
That was everything.
I was like in it, and then you get to the one chapter, and he's like, "You're back so soon," and they're like, they didn't realize what time it was. Like, I had the same experience.
Yeah.
I was like, "What time is it?" Oh. I'm sitting here listening to this.
I was like, "Don't interrupt him. We're not done with the story." I just can't even. People need to read this book just to get sucked into the world, because
I found that very fascinating, and then I was just like, this is so clever.
Yes!
Just this idea of this story is so clever, like, that he sat down and thought, I wonder what the effect this is having on rats, and I want to write a little children's book about, like, you know, you know, what effect this experimentation would possibly have.
I enjoyed the fact that it wasn't... I mean, obviously it's a fantasy world, but it wasn't a fantasy in the sense that all of a sudden these rats just have lights and carpet and we're just accepting that as the norm. They're explaining how
exactly
they did all of this and how, like, it makes sense.
It does. Right?
It makes you like, feel like it's a realistic
thing.
Like, yeah. I love that part of it.
The rats are smarter than you. They are. I'm never going to look at rats the same.
I'm trying not to look at them at all.
I mean,
I don't really see them.
I like to spot them when we would wait on trains in New York. It's like a fun game.
I've never seen a rat in New York. I've had people that were with me say that they saw them.
I mean, thankfully, I've never... Like, some people have seen them on the trains or on the track.
Oh, no.
I've never experienced
that. I would be getting off of that train.
And sometimes they'll be like... out on the sidewalk, like, dead.
Oh, that's sad.
I've seen mice a lot, though.
I see mice a lot, but having, you know, to live in a barn.
There you go.
There's a lot of mice.
Maybe. There's a little rat.
Maybe there's a little mouse who lives out in the field. Mrs. Frisbee. And her family of mice children. Make sure you look at them different. That's fine. Stay out of my house. Do not poop in my kitchen drawers.
Take it, sorry.
That's my message. And also, so during this time we learn about, so Nicodemus and his friend Jenner.
Yes.
Which, that's just a fun name for me to say, Jenner.
Yeah.
And they get captured.
Arthur.
Yeah, Arthur. And then that's where they meet Justin. And then they escape. And then we learn that Jonathan, Mrs. Frisbee's husband,
yes.
And Mr. Ages were there as well.
It's a good strong
And Jonathan
name.
And Mr. Ages help the rats escape. Yeah, so as soon as I found out that Jonathan was a part of this, and like they've been doing all this experimentation on them with the injections and such, my first thought was, how does this affect the their children?
Yes.
Well, and in the already in the book it had said the kids learned to read really quickly.
Yes. Yeah.
So that was curious to me.
Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that they do address that, like, because Mrs. Frisbee asked Nick and Davis, like, does this affect my kids, you know? And he's like, we don't really know about if they'll live longer because their kids weren't that old yet. But they did know that they learned how to read pretty quickly. So it's probably likely the children will live
long. Yeah, there's only one more book.
So I don't know. That was just, like you said, it was so fascinating to me.
I just love being a part of their little world. I mean, they're so smart and clever, and I like...
We'll get there.
Keep going.
Next theme. Doing the right thing, even though it may not be the easy thing.
Yes.
So the rats have the plan.
Yes, with a capital P.
Yes. Because they have to, in order for them to exist and live the life that they live with their technology and such, they have to steal and rely on humans. And they don't like that. I feel like part of the injections, like, and making them smarter, they realize, like, the moral, like, wrongness of it, you know?
Right. Well, that's the theory, I think, along with evolution, is that the more progressed humans get, the more they should be morally upstanding. It seems to be.
It seems to not be working.
I
guess it's going to take a long time.
That is the theory, because back in the day, the cavemen would just kill and do whatever.
Cavemen.
But then once they progress, I mean, I personally do not hold to that theory. But I think it makes sense in what they're trying to purport.
No, here. I get that, yeah. So they decide that they need to leave their machines and electricity.
Except they really like their little lights.
I like, I mean, you put it here, change, you're going against traditions, that where we're at. I like.
Yeah, we're kind of in that section.
I like that is happening here, and I think that while I may not agree with all of the scientific things that they're trying to teach, I do like the idea that kids are seeing that you don't have to keep doing what everyone's doing just because everyone's doing it. That maybe that's not right, and maybe we should make some changes.
Right. Well, and I don't know, because like some may say they're surviving being thieves, but they're showing that there is a different way for them to survive.
Right.
They don't have to. Like,
it's possible to, yes. I like they say, like, we're going to destroy our machines. Like, we're going to destroy all of this. Like, twofold. Like, one, like, if people find it, then they'll know that those rats are alive and come looking for them. But also because they know that it's going to be a temptation for them to go back because they've lived this way so long. And so going, you know, especially the first several months maybe will be very difficult for them. And there would be that temptation to go back.
Right.
And for me, I like to get, you know, truths out of it, you know, go a little deeper. But I think, like, sometimes, you know, for us, we could learn, like, you know, a certain activity might not be bad. Like, their machines were good. Like, it helped them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but they also led them to steal. And they knew that if they didn't destroy their machines, they would return to stealing. And I think we have to do this in our own lives, you know, like something as simple as, like, you know, not having cookies in the house, you know, or whatever. Like, or don't hang out with certain people because they encourage you to do things that you shouldn't do, you know?
I really like cookies, though.
I know.
I know.
first thing that popped into my head was The Office.
Tell me.
When Andy quits, I have to burn all my bridges. So you can go be an actor or whatever, or a singer. Oh, yes. I totally forgot about that. And I'm sorry, but that's what I thought of when they were like, we have to destroy everything so we don't want to come back.
That's good. I love it.
So there's Andy's brain.
I think that's a deep thought, too.
Yeah.
It's good. We push ourselves to be better by doing stuff like that. But
it's not a bad idea to do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Burn your bridges. Mm-hmm. Not all of them. Some of them you need.
But yeah, just like going against tradition, or I guess against like what everyone else is doing. Like mm-hmm. it's, you know, well, we've always done it this way. I think some of the rats even said that. But we've always done, like, we've done it this way. Like, why do we have to change? Like, I think we need to stop and ask ourselves, like, am I doing this, like, whatever it is, am I doing this because it's the right thing to do, or am I doing it because it's how we've always done it,
right?
Or because it's socially acceptable? I think this is a question that we need to ask ourselves, like, at your job or whatever. I sit in on a lot of NICU meetings, and they ask themselves that question, like, is this the right thing to do?
Mm-hmm. Which is why they're advancing.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they just kept doing the same thing.
It's like, well, we've been doing it this way forever.
Yes.
You know, it's fine. You know, it's like, yeah, but is it the right thing to do?
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. And do we need to make changes?
I kind of had that thought with all of this, like the race riots and and everything that's gone on lately. And Joey and I watched a documentary about, back in the, would have been in the 50s when... 50s when Martin Luther King Jr., I think, died. It was around in that era, 50s, 60s, when all of the head leaders were out there, like Martin Luther King Jr., and there were like three different guys that were all the heads of these movements. Anyway, I was thinking of those times, and they showed some pretty graphic images of things that were done to Black people in the South, and I started getting really upset with the people, especially Christians, that treated Black people like that back then. And I don't think it's wrong to be upset with that. It's an injustice and it needs to be rectified. But I think a lot of it has to do with what we're talking about right
now. Absolutely.
It's just how things were done.
Yep.
And this is how it is.
Yep.
I mean, we're just segregated. That's how it is.
Yeah.
We don't need to change that.
This is the way life
is. Or this is how, you know, we just treat them like this because this is how it is. Yep. And I'm thankful for people that stood up and gave their lives to say, no, this is not how it is.
Yeah.
This is not okay.
Yeah.
And
we are all created in God's image.
Yes.
We're all image bearers. And we need to treat each other as such.
Exactly.
Christ died for all nations, not just white people.
I mean, and it just was sickening to me, some of the signs that were... aren't, like, I'm so glad God made me white. Don't you wish you were white, too?
Wow.
God made them Black, and that's how he wanted them to be, and that's not...
Well, and I think also, like, Jesus himself
wasn't... He wasn't white. They wouldn't have even, like, Jesus.
Yeah. That's the funniest thing to me.
Well, they do these whole, like, blood and soil chants where, you know, they have the right to more freedoms here in America because they were original. But that's...
You're not original.
If we're going to get technical, first of all, that's the Native Americans.
Yeah, Natives
and second
original.
Of all, slaves came over with the first people that came. I mean, they built this country.
Exactly. Like,
and it's not a matter of who came first, you know? That's stupid. It's all stupid.
Yeah, there's
some of these things
there's absolutely no logic. It's just... And it's very upsetting, but I don't know. I just, I'm going through, like, an attitude shift in a lot of areas. And, like, Lee and I have talked about this off air. just about how, like, you know, we have grown up thinking, well, I don't think that. Or I don't, you know, I'm not racist. And then we're put in a certain situation and you realize... I am racist, and I need to fix this. Like, this isn't right, you know? Like, and you just, when you're put in certain situations, you learn a lot more about yourself. It's kind of scary. But I'm thankful that I'm being, I don't know, I really feel like God's doing something in our hearts, and I think in our nation, because I just feel like lately, like, we're just being confronted with these issues a lot more, and even just, like, in the books we've been reading, which hasn't been, like, I mean, some of them we have sought out because we want to change our attitude, but some of them we were like, oh, this looks like a cool book, and then these issues are brought up, like Echo we talked about last time, and, you know, your
Red Brown Girl Dream,
which
is amazing. If you want to have your mind shifted a little bit, I would definitely recommend that book.
So, yeah, I'm just like, you know what? I think God's trying to teach us something, because at least me, I know my attitude needs to change.
And just knowing that how it's always been is not an excuse.
No, it's not
an excuse. That we can make a change and we need to.
Right. Or there's also the thought, well, I just don't understand that.
Yeah.
I don't get that, so I'm not going to do anything or say anything.
Or just, I think sometimes it's an intimidation factor. I don't get it, I don't understand it, so it must be wrong.
It must be wrong, or they must be, you know, they must not be
right. It must not be right.
Yeah. But it's like, just being a white person, we don't understand what these minority people go through. We have no idea what they're thinking. But that doesn't mean that what they're thinking is wrong. And I'm just, I'm learning to be respectful and more considerate, and learning to just listen. Sometimes we just need to stop talking and listen and learn, you know. It's hard. This attitude shift is hard, but it's also the right thing to do.
I feel like the whole society needs that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I don't know, like, because laws and stuff change, like women's rights,
sure,
and people's rights, but the law doesn't matter when you still have these people that disagree with it and still treat people a certain way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, in that Brown Girl Dreaming, she talks about how when they changed the law that black people could sit anywhere on the bus, which is absolutely absurd that there was a law about that. Like, sometimes when you, I've known this my whole life, but when you sit and think about what it actually was, like, wait, what? Anyway, when they changed the law, it took some serious courage to actually sit in the front of the bus, because they could get beat up or, you know, at the very least, ridiculed and yelled at.
Right.
But it doesn't change people's hearts. And obviously the greatest heart change needs to come from Christ. But I think there is a lot to be said for standing up for those that are being mistreated.
I think it's a big responsibility that the church has.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems to me that a lot of church people look at it and say, well, I don't agree with everything. I don't agree with everything that these people are marching for. I'm not saying that with just the black rights, but any kind of movement. I don't agree with 100% of it, so I can't stand for any of it. And so they just sit down or just keep their mouths shut, because, I mean, in the day, in the 50s, 60s, some of the things they were marching for were more, I don't know, it was more than just black rights. And so a lot of the people, well, that's, it's all wrong because of these few things.
Yeah.
Or there was violence. Mm-hmm. There was a certain group that was, they were done sitting down and taking it, and they were going to be violent.
Wasn't that Malcolm X?
Yes. That's the other guy I was trying to think of. You think I could remember a name like that? So, you know, people are like, well, that's wrong.
Right. So
we're just not supporting all this. Black rights movements are wrong. Like, that's not okay. You have to look at the human rights of the situation and say, okay, we may not agree with 100% of everything that you stand for, but I don't think you can say that for many people that are in your life.
Yeah, exactly. No, I agree.
Sorry. It's a rabbit trail, but...
That's exactly where my mind went when I was typing up these notes. So I'm glad that we went there on the show.
Special episode 10.
Getting deep here, guys.
I think one of the other things that I don't know that he was really gearing at this, but I noticed it when Mrs. Frisbee was in the cage. Are we getting there yet?
No, go for it.
That was terrible. I was very upset.
Several things from that situation. But one of the things that I noticed he said was the little boy put her in the cage. Was it his brother or his father? Oh, the dad said.
Paul or the father? It's hard to tell from the sentence. One of them said, "Why don't you let it go?" Referring to Mrs. Frisbee.
I'm pretty sure it was
poor little thing. It's scared to death. No, it's not. It's just not used to the cage. I bet it will die. I bet it won't. You just can't put wild things, wild animals in cages. You have to catch them when they're babies. They do it in zoos. Yes, but they know more about it. Anyway, a lot of them die anyway. So I didn't know if that was something he was addressing. Mm. Not only the rats in captivity, but also...
like all animals.
All animals. Mm-hmm. The older I get, the more.
Well, I have, like, we went to the zoo in a few months ago. We took Nora. It was her first time going to the zoo. And it was very sad. Like, I'm just going to say it. Like, they had, like, some of the animals, especially the bigger ones. Like, there was, like, a polar bear, and he was just in there alone by himself. And then there was, in the cage next to him, there was a grizzly bear in there by himself. The polar bear was just pacing back and forth by the window. And all these screaming children are, like, beating on the glass. And I'm like, oh, my word. And then
I had several Disney movies.
I know, right? Which is what they wanted. Yeah. And then, like, the lion, I think the lion section was the most, well, one of the most heartbreaking. Because it's this very small area, and here's this huge lion who's just laying there. And my husband pointed out, he's like, aren't lions meant to, like, run? And he's like, he's not going to be able to hit top
speed. He can't
speed
out here. There's no way out.
Top speed.
And it was just really sad. And then, like, the giraffes
chase, like, zebras and crap and kill them.
And, like, the giraffes, like, they couldn't go anywhere. Like, this one giraffe, it was so sad. Like, they had trimmed the trees back, and maybe they're not supposed to eat these kinds of trees. Maybe it would make them sick, but he was trying to reach the tree. And he couldn't reach it. And it just made me sad. So,
domesticated animals are one thing.
Right.
My dog and my cat live to be in my presence, okay?
Yes.
That's what they love. But not a lion.
Yeah, that made me sad. Like, I'm all about, like, rescue, rehabilitation, and release, you know, as Weaver tells us.
Finding Dory. That's different. Like, they've been hurt. Yeah. They need some help. You help them out. They go back.
Yeah, the whole concept of the zoo is just... that's sad to me.
Hopefully one day. Why can't people just do, like, safaris where you're going through their world?
I mean,
there's risk with that, but.
I definitely think humans are more important than animals.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
Just want to be clear on that statement. However.
We are the stewards of the animals.
Yes. And by stewards, yes, we are supposed to have dominion. I get that in the Bible. But that doesn't mean abuse or just, we need to be smart. These are God's creatures that he has made. And
when it's
fabulous, you want little poopsie to see a giraffe, but
we have the internet. Something that's created to do something, like, think about it for yourself. Like, how would you like to be locked up in a certain size space and whatever?
Some people call that work.
Yeah. So,
break free right now.
Yes, but at the end of the day.
Sit in my cubicle all day. The children come up and paint the window.
At the end of the day, you get to leave and you get to go home and do what you want. Yep.
It is my life.
Cooking.
Did we get our saliva cookies?
Anyway, I'm glad I could send us down that rabbit trail.
But still, I have some time to myself where I can do what I was created to do.
Oh, yeah.
Lions and things, they're just not
clearly. You make the decision to go to work so you can live.
Exactly.
They did not make that
desired choice.
So we also have the theme of self-sacrifice and loyalty. Obviously, Mrs. Frisbee is willing to sacrifice her life for her children.
So are the rats.
Justin, Mr. Ages. Her husband pays the ultimate sacrifice, and we learn that he was killed by the cat. So, and we don't know
what the orange cat like mine.
We learn at the end that two of the rats die in trying to get the other rats out, and they don't tell us who they are.
I have answers, but I won't tell if you want to read the sequel.
Yes, they kind of leave it open-ended, so we don't know if one of them was Justin or not. It's kind of easy to assume that it's him because he's the type that would go back and help the rats that couldn't get out.
But. I love him. So much I love him.
Yeah.
Wow.
You guys have additional thoughts on this book before I get into... I do want to talk about the movie a little bit.
I'm going to read the sequel, I think. Those are my additional thoughts.
I liked this line. I love that the rats read books.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of teaching kids that knowledge is power.
I was thinking that when I was reading through it and how they explained like all the stuff they learned from reading and stuff. I was like, yes.
One of the books he was reading in talked about the rat race, or that's what the book was called, so that's why he wanted to read it, and he was disappointed that it wasn't actually about rats, but he said it means a race where no matter how fast you run, you don't get anywhere. But there was nothing in the book about rats, and I felt bad about the title because I thought it wasn't a rat race at all. It was a people race. And no sensible rats would ever do anything so foolish.
Mm.
And I feel bad for the rats, you know?
They get a bad name. Number for them.
I learned about that on a podcast. This lady takes pictures of her favorite quotations in books and keeps them on file.
That's a smart idea.
So when I was reading this, I can't write in it. Mm-hmm. It's a library book.
I can write mine.
Helpful tip for our listeners.
I will get into the movie adaptation titled The Secret of Nim. Now, this has a lot of interesting facts and tidbits about it. This was the first feature film to be directed by Don Bluth. You guys are probably sick of me talking about Don Bluth. So, the rights to the book were offered to Disney in 1972, but they turned it down.
Mm.
So Don Bluth and a few of his fellow animators, they worked at Walt Disney. Mm-hmm. And they set up their own independent studio and kind of set up on their own, leaving Disney. There was a dispute with the CEO of the company at the time, who was actually Walt Disney's son-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
So they left, and their studio was, like, out of his garage at first until they could afford, like, to rent out a building.
Yeah,
right? Exactly. I thought that's interesting. So one of the writers on their team had been reading the book, and he's like, guys, let's do this. And so they decided to do it, and so they made a few changes to the story. I could get really technical about this, but I'm not going to. So if you're listening and you're like, talk about the animation style and all of that, I'm not going to. It's all on Wikipedia if you're into that. Because I could get really nerdy about that, but I'm not going to. So the movie kind of takes out the flashback scenes of them in the laboratory, and it kind of... They made a lot of changes. They added magic to it because Don Bluth was like, cartoons should have magic in it. So, okay, whatever. So they give Mrs. Frisbee an amulet that kind of glows whenever she has courage.
I thought I remembered this.
She kind of becomes the hero of her own story, basically. Like, yes, she sets out and gets help from the owl and the rats, but she ends up like, in the movie, when she's trapped in the bird cage, she gets herself out. She doesn't wait for Justin to come find her. And she ends up moving the house herself using the power of the amulet.
That's dumb.
So there was that. They also had to change her name.
Oh, that's right. I remember you saying that.
Because of the company Frisbee, you know, the toys. So it is spelled differently. So they went to Frisbee, the manufacturer was Whammo, and they asked them, is it okay if we, this is the name of the mouse in the book, we just wanted to check with you and make sure it was okay. And they were like, no, it's not okay. So they had to change her name to Mrs. Brisbee. So,
wow.
Yeah. So, and they,
way to be a bunch
and
of booties.
I think they did it to just be like courteous. And so they went to them after all of the dialogue had been recorded. So they had to go back and re-record all of the lines where they said her name and change it to Mrs. Brisbee. and one of the actors wasn't available, so they had to, like, do some crazy, like, sound editing and taking words where he said the B sound and put it where he said. I was like, oh, my word.
That's intense.
Way to go, Frisbee.
Yeah. So.
That's dumb.
I would have been like, I don't care.
It's not going to hurt your business at all.
Like, yeah, it's spelled totally differently. It has nothing to do with Frisbees.
Well, it's not like the, I mean,
if anything,
was it named Mrs. Frisbee? Were they going to name the whole movie that?
I don't know the answer to that.
So I feel like if the movie was still The Secret of NIMH, no one would even know.
Yeah, it's really weird. It's really weird.
I like it being called The Secret of NIMH.
But yeah, Don Bluth.
The Planet.
He did the 5-0 movies.
Yes.
Fabulous West, An American Tale. He did Anastasia, Thumbelina, Land Before Time. I mean, come on, guys. Land Before Time. So that's the movie. And I just wanted to give my thoughts on the change, like the one specific change they made of making Mrs. Frisbee her own hero. And the reason Don Bluth wanted to do this was because he thought that it took away from her character arc for the rats to do everything for her. And I have to say that I disagree. Now, whatever, that's his opinion, and whatever. In my opinion, that takes away from the sense of community that we have in the book. Like, I don't believe that her needing help from the owl and the rats lessens her character arc or her own strength or perseverance and loyalty. Do you guys?
No.
Like, I don't know. I know this is a book about animals, but I think as children read this, like, they're learning these themes, and, like, these characters are taking on human characteristics, you know? So, like, we're learning these human characteristics. It's like, I don't know. We need a sense of community, guys. We need the spirit of the people, you know? Like,
yes, well, not everyone is down for that. And it's upsetting.
We need each other, and
I love friends.
To me, that takes away from that, but I love the movie as a kid. We watched it over and over and over again, so I'm not saying the movie's not good, but that's just my opinion.
I wonder if we still have that somewhere.
I don't know if we ever owned it.
We had it on VHS.
Oh, did we? I thought we just rented it from, like, the movie store.
I'm pretty sure Mom just finally bought it. Just kept renting it. Because I remember the case for it was all tattered.
Yeah. Put it in. Yeah, maybe she does. They also made Jenner. They made Jenner kind of like the villain in the story instead of just.
See,
like,
I thought I remember there being
just like a sword fight at the end.
Yeah,
between Jenner the whole time and I was Justin. Reading,
I was like, I feel like I remember one of these characters being villainous.
Yeah,
and it like never happened.
So yeah, in the book, Jenner wasn't. He just was like, yeah, I don't agree with you. I'm gonna leave. I think it's fried. Or allegedly. We never find out if that was really them, but we can assume that it was him and his compatriots.
We'll give you answers. Jenner. Are you going to read the sequel?
I don't know. I might.
Okay. You're just saying that because you want to torture me and not let me give my answers.
I was going to mention the 1972 Newbery Honor Books. There are several. I'm not going to get into them or read the blurbs about them. So the first one was Incident at Hawks Hill by Alan W. Eckert. Then there was The Planet of Junior Brown by Virginia Hamilton. Mandy, you'll like this next one. The Tombs of Atuan by Ursula K. Le Guin. This book is number 2 in a series of fantasy books. It's called The Earthsea Cycle. I actually might want to check this out. I've never heard of it, but it sounds pretty cool. Annie and the Old One by Miska Miles. And The Headless Cupid by Zilpha Keatley Snyder. So she's the same author who wrote that creepy book, The Witches of Worm, about that cat. And
she almost made it again.
Yeah. But this book sounds, in my opinion, sounds just as creepy as that book, but it has nicer comments on Goodreads.
Maybe it's just her style, man. Everyone's got their style.
I don't think I would let my kid read her books. I think she gets too into that stuff.
It's like,
that's my opinion.
It's like, there's got to be a Tim Burton in every.
I think she's worse. I don't mind Tim Burton. Anyway, so those are the books. Congratulations. Leah, are you ready to announce our next book?
Yes, I am.
I don't remember what we decided on. So
it's still a surprise. I remember.
Wow.
Okay, for our next read, we are going to be looking at the 2017 Newbery Medal winner, which is called The Girl Who Drank the Moon by Kelly Barnhill. I'm just going to read a shorter version, a little blurb about it.
No, we don't want any spoilers.
Yeah, no spoilers.
Even the little excerpt about it is like three paragraphs long. Too long. Okay. It's an epic fantasy about a young girl raised by a witch, a swamp monster, and a perfectly tiny dragon who must unlock the powerful magic buried deep inside her.
That sounds fun.
Dragons.
Fun little fall read,
yeah,
I think.
It's along with the rest of the Harry Potter books.
It's year's winner.
Yeah.
So that's exciting.
I'm excited. I've been wanting to read it, and I have waited for the sake of the podcast. Was between that and rereading the history of mankind.
It's a difficult decision.
If one of you ever decides to do that, I will not be on that episode. Not doing it.
I don't think I'll ever revisit that book.
Yes.
No.
So I'm right there with you. All right, let's let the people know how to get in contact with us.
You can email us, teenfriendshippodcast@gmail.com.
You can follow us on Instagram at Teen Friendship Podcast.
We're on Facebook, www.facebook.com/Teen Friendship Podcast.
You can find us on Twitter at Three Friends Podcast.
And our website, teenfriendshippodcast.com.
You can find me on Twitter at Gracie Firstborn.
You can find me on Instagram, Leah Ragnell.
You can also find me on Instagram at Mandy Malay.
This is a good discussion on Mrs. Frisbee and the Rats of Nim.
Yes.
So until next time, see you all on another time.
And remember, friends, no two persons ever read the same book.
And if you're Mandy, you spent your whole day off
reading this one.
Episode.
This is a special episode. I'm just eating some watermelon.
That's our 10th episode watermelon.
Mm-hmm. Nature's cake, right? I'm totally blanking on what the word is for this. And when I say it, you guys are going to think I'm an idiot, but.
I didn't even read through this, Lauren.
What is this?
I don't know.
You're also the one that wakes me up from naps to make said videos.
You know what? It's raining, Mandy. We have to go outside.
Sounds creepy.
We were in Disney World. I think waking her up from a nap in Disney World is okay. It's not like we were home.
It's true.
Everyone, open your books
to page one.
Mandy's joking.
I understand.
One of the things that
Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Sorry.
She can't help herself.
Yeah, I gotta do it every time.
So he apparently struggled physically. He was weak, and also it said in a couple places. Wow. We are losing it. So it said in a few places. Oh my goodness.
I was fine. I was fine.
This is why we can't be in the same room. Okay.
I know, because when I'm at home by myself, like, I can secretly mute myself. Right. It's like.
Okay.
I'm all right now. I promise I'm okay.
I need to know more about this Robert.
So.
Yes.
Okay.
The three of us.
You know? What if he was like, think about your own mother?
Mandy and I have the same mother.
We do.
I think we need to just give a round of applause for all those ordinary workers out there. All of you included.
Are you done reading it?
Yes.
Okay. I got that all out, Lauren.
I thought the applause signaled the end. So.
Yeah, that wasn't in my notes. That was spontaneous. Applause. Yeah.
Stop looking at me like that, Lauren.
Who's your turn?
Manny's distracted by the children playing basketball outside, which I'm hoping I can edit that out. Pretty positive I can.
It's good because I can't shut my window.
I'm pretty
yes, because the window is broken.
The window.
I could just go take the ball.
No, Manny, that's not nice.
It's not
but
nice.
Then we'd have an actual ball to pass.
Yeah, we just we'll give it
excuse
back.
Me, we need this.
Borrow it for something metaphorical.